Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack. With me is Dan the Man. If you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Of course, you know the new blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, but there is various content added throughout the week, so swing on over there, check that out, see what's going on. And, of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, go ahead and hit that link, get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could give that a like while you're over there, well, we greatly appreciate that. There's also the Sports Time Radio Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Dan and I are on Twitter as well. I am at Burke Time, and Dan the Man is at?
Dan the Man with three E's.
Oh, so a lot of... You know, a lot of stuff going on, but the fun one I wanted to talk to you about right off the bat here is I saw the big NBA rumor today. You know, obviously there was the trade over the weekend with Cousins going to the New Orleans Pelicans. But what I heard today, and I found this interesting, Dan, the Timberwolves have contacted the Knicks. Now, of course, everybody hears the word Knicks and they think, well, they want Carmelo Anthony. Believe it or not, the Timberwolves were actually asking the Knicks for Derrick Rose. How do you feel about a Rose-Tibbs reunion?
That's very interesting. I mean, at the same time, he knows the guy only half the season, so no harm, no foul, right?
Yeah, you know, and the way this is set up, it's most likely a contract grab for the T-Wolves more than it is, you know, Tibbs actually wanting to get back with Derrick Rose. You know, I mean, I'm sure, you know, he has no issues with it, but, you know, Rose is only signed through this year. So, you know, that salary immediately comes off the books, and, you know, it would give Minnesota some flexibility to go out and, you know, try to bring some guys in. So I understand the move. I don't know if it would, you know, if it will actually happen or, you know, anything like that. But I thought it was quite humorous when, that was like one of the first things I heard this morning was they were interested. And I was like, oh, okay, that's cool.
Well, I wanted to get your thoughts on this one because I heard this, I think yesterday was my day off. Got to listen to a little bit more sports radio, and someone called in, and they, you know, it was a matter of kind of the guys whose job is to be in sports, kind of arguing with a caller, not arguing, but kind of going back and forth. And and this guy was talking about having, you know, the people sit down and talk with the Bulls about getting Jimmy. And, you know, isn't that something that the, you know, Garn Pack should look into as far as giving Jimmy a chance and putting him with somebody that he knows? And, you know, their side was, well, why would they want to do that? And I don't know. It was just kind of comical to me. But, I mean, why would you want to do something like that within your own division? And do you think that's even a possibility? Trading Jimmy.
Yeah, you know, obviously he's a hot name out there. You know, there are a lot of names that are starting to come up now. You know, like I heard the Nets are actively shopping Brook Lopez, and apparently their price just came down. So, you know, there's a lot of movement. I mean, I guess the question is, okay, well, if you're going to send Jimmy Butler to Minnesota, I mean, that's fine. But what are you getting back? I mean, you're not going to get Andrew Wiggins. you know, if that's what somebody thinks, you know, you're going to get draft picks and pieces. So, you know, I mean, if you're going to go ahead and deal them, aren't you better off just sending them to Boston to get the Nets pick so you at least have a shot at getting the number one overall pick and no worse than third?
Yeah, and I mean, I don't really know a whole lot about the draft coming up, so I don't know.
Well, you know, everything I've heard, you know, when, you know, the big deal, of course, you know, I know we kind of, you know, glanced over it, however you want to look at it. You know, the Kings, after saying I don't know how many times that they weren't going to deal DeMarcus Cousins, well, they dealt DeMarcus Cousins. He went to New Orleans for, let me see if I can find the trade here. Yeah, the Pelicans get DeMarcus Cousins and Omar Caspi. They go to New Orleans. Sacramento gets Tyreek Evans, Buddy Hield, Langston Galloway, and both of the Pelicans' 2017 draft picks, the first and the second round. This is supposed to be a really strong draft. You know, like this last one, 2016 was supposed to be really weak. This one, in return, is supposed to be very strong. Now, oddly, a deal like this actually kind of messes with the Bulls, Dan. I didn't realize this, but the Kings, the Bulls own the Kings' first-round draft pick as long as it is outside of the top 10. Now, it was there for a while, but now that they've traded Cousins and they basically didn't get a ton back in return, it looks like that draft pick is going to fall inside the top 10 and the Bulls aren't going to get it this year.
That's hilarious.
So, yeah, you know, and then just like, you know, in fantasy trade, Dan, since the Kings acquired so many guys, they had to let somebody go. They decided to waive Matt Barnes to accommodate the players they are bringing in. But, yeah, you know, it was an interesting trade. And then when I even found Otter, I don't know if you saw this, but they had an interview with Vlade Divac, who's the Kings' general manager. And he actually mentioned that 2 days before he made the deal, he had a better offer from another team. But he couldn't take it because of the agents that were involved. So he actually had to settle for a lesser offer. He didn't go into any more detail than that, so I don't know if it was an agent wanting his guy to get an extension or something like that, if he was moved or however it was going to work out. It would have been nice if he could have explained a little more. But, yeah, I think sometimes we forget that, you know, you just can't mix parts. You just can't go, oh, hey, okay, no problem. I'll give you this guy for that guy. There is a little more involved with it kind of behind the scenes.
The NBA is confusing.
Yeah, you know, but the trade deadline is Thursday, so we're probably going to get a whole bunch of, you know, interesting fun stuff. But then today, again, I don't know how caught up you are or anything, you know, the Lakers brought Magic Johnson in basically a week or so ago as an advisory guy. Well, you know, he said that he wanted to run the show. Today he was promoted. His title is now president of basketball operations. And the first thing he did was fire the general manager, Mitch Kupchak. He also fired the vice president of public relations, a fellow by the name of John Black. And then Jim Buss, who owns the team, he was the executive vice president of basketball operations. He basically is going to be reassigned because obviously you can't fire the owner. So, you know, Magic came in and, you know, really got his wish here, Dan. I mean, he's the guy. You know, how do you think he's going to do?
Well, he better do well. I mean, as long as he does better than Kawhi, he's not.
Yeah, you would think so. you know, well, you know, I guess, you know, the question here, Dan, is, you know, the Lakers are going to have some cap space. are free agents going to be willing to, you know, they would probably have to take a little less money than they could get from the team they're with. Are they going to be willing to do that, to come play for Magic?
I mean, I can't speak for others, but I can say I would. And you've got to imagine that some of the guys, you know, that are around my age and even, you know, within the last 10 years would still know who Magic is and want to be a part of that.
You know, and, you know, I mean, you know, the one thing about Magic is, I mean, you can tell by listening to his interviews and, you know, anything like that is he definitely can sell. You know, he won't have a problem with, you know, doing the sales pitch. You know, I just wonder when he has to go to a guy and say, hey, well, you know, by rule, we can only offer you this. You know, how many guys are going to jump at it? So yeah, it'll be interesting to kind of see the moves he makes. Or, you know, the weird thing is, of course, obviously, you know, this is happening, you know, 3 days before the trade deadline. I guess that means Magic is in charge of making all the trades because they don't have a general manager right now.
Yeah, I would think he is. It seems like him and Jeannie are on the same wavelength, or, you know, same page. There's more.
So yeah, you know, definitely it was kind of like, hey, you know, what's going on here? But, you know, I don't think the Lakers are the center of any major talks. I know the one name I heard today is, I guess, the Charlotte Hornets have asked them about Lou Williams, who's kind of a multi-purpose guard, point guard, shooting guard for them, who's played pretty well. You know, obviously it wouldn't hurt the Lakers to move some guys and get some picks if this draft is as strong as, you know, everybody thought it was going to be. The one rumor I heard today, and I guess it wasn't even really a rumor, but I guess the Clippers inquired to the Wizards, Dan, about them dealing Porter. And what I couldn't figure out was why the Clippers would even do that unless they were going to give up quite a haul. You know, the Wizards are 5 games out of the top spot in the East. They're in third place. They're 34-21. And Otto Porter, like, technically it's Otto Porter Jr., I believe he's either the best three-point shooter in the league, or he's right there in, like, the top 2 or 3. Why in the hell would a playoff team like the Wizards move a guy like that? You know, unless you were getting, you know, especially to the Clippers, unless you're getting a haul, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could ask that same question as to why the Hawks move Korver just to help boost the Cavaliers.
Yeah, well, that was when Atlanta was allegedly selling everybody, and they were going to let's use the term tank, as we like to do that. And I checked here. Otto Porter is actually the best 3-point shooter in the NBA right now. So, you know, and I get it. You know, teams make these calls probably all the time, but, you know, it's like, yeah, great. What are you going to give me? You know, to make me, you know, if they've got something that'll help them compete with the Cavaliers, hey, great, okay, well, here's Otto Porter, no problem, we can work something out here. But, you know, the Clippers just, they don't have that. You know, what, are they going to swap him J.J. Redick? It's basically the same player, you know, except Porter's shooting a lot better than he is this year. So, sometimes these things pop up, and I'm just thinking to myself, why in the hell is this even out there? But, you know, I don't know, Dan. You know, I guess the big thing here locally, what do you think? The deadline's Thursday. Does Jimmy Butler get moved, or is he still a Bull?
He's still a Bull.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I guess the one Bulls rumor I heard today is apparently they're real close to moving Nikola Mirotic, but they didn't say to who. So I don't know if that was just kind of a leaked story by the team to try to get some action on him, or if there's actually something going on there. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think he should definitely see one of the guys to go. Start seeing what your young guys.
Yeah, you know, it would be interesting to see, you know, what they could get or who would step up and, you know, maybe trade for him, because I still think in the right system, he could be a really dangerous player. And I really thought the Bulls were going to have that system this year, but they're not doing anything close to what I thought they were going to do. So I don't understand their philosophy or whatever they were doing, but I was just clueless when it came to, you know, what Fred Hoiberg's style was, I guess.
Well, I think we still are, and, you know, I heard talks like, you get rid of Fred, I think the only way Fred goes is if Gar goes, because you're Gar, you brought this guy in, this is your guy. How can you fire your guy, right?
Yeah, you know, I somebody's got to go, I think. I mean, I don't know what, who or what they'll do, but... It'll be, you know, when it finally gets here, and obviously, believe it or not, the offseason actually isn't that far away for the NBA. I know the finals will go till June, but, you know, for a lot of these teams, you know, the offseason is going to start in about, what have they played, about 50 games maybe, a little over 50 games?
Yeah.
The Celtics have played 57, so they're almost to 60. And there's how many, what do they play, 82? Or do they play 81 and hockey plays 80? So, yeah, it's not, you know, less than, you know, 25, 30 games. You know, some teams are going to be heading into the offseason. You know, for a team like the Bulls, it'll probably only take a week after that to be eliminated from the playoffs, and then they'll be in their offseason. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see if they're planning on making a change, if they have an idea to make a change, or, you know, if they like it, because I know, I think Fred Hoiberg has 3 years left on his deal. So, we'll have to start. Boy, you know, Dan, I just realized I really haven't been paying attention to basketball. Do you know the Brooklyn Nets lost 14 games in a row? Yeah, but you'd think when your streak gets to double digits, don't you? You know, shouldn't somebody notice? You know, and, you know, the sad part is, you know, they dealt away so many draft picks, there's nothing they can do to get better. I know that's part of the reason they're trying to move Brook Lopez. I guess they originally were asking for 2 first-round picks, but today I saw the story come out where it says they'll take a first and a second in, you know, next year's draft. Again, because it's supposed to be just a strong draft, so they're trying to get in on it. But, yeah, I just don't know. It's kind of like... Hey, okay, is anybody going to give me this?
All right, but I mean, the big news here in Chicago, and I don't know how big it will be with the NFL, but Jeff Darling. Is it Jeff Darling? I just lost the tweet from ESPN. Yeah, Darlington is saying that the Bears. His sources that the Bears are now actively shopping Jay Cutler. I mean, they draft a quarterback for the third pick, or they try to sell that pick for a lower pick and maybe more, and draft a quarterback later. I mean, because personally, I don't see the point of moving Cutler, drafting a QB, putting him in, and ultimately letting him fail in his first season with the Bears. Because I don't know, I feel like that's your way to handle.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess, you know, my first question is this really news? You know, I mean, haven't the Bears been actively shopping Jay Cutler for about 2 years now, and they just can't find a taker? You know, was it two drafts ago, or was it last year? They had, everybody had to go into Tennessee, right?
Yeah, but then Tennessee had that high draft pick, and then they took, what's his name? So I can't think of right now.
Right, they went with Mariota instead. So, yeah, I mean, it's been basically two full years the Bears are shopping Jay Cutler. I don't, you know, I don't understand how this is news. But, yeah, I mean, I guess if you want to continue to lose, you know, you deal Cutler, you draft a quarterback with the third pick, you pass up on all that talent that's at the top of the draft because obviously you just booked yourself into a corner and you need a quarterback. So yeah, let's do that. That sounds like a good move to rebuild your franchise, right?
Yeah, I mean, or like everyone thinks, you know, trade your third round pick to the team that just won the Super Bowl and hold a guy for a season that hasn't proven anything.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the other thing, obviously. Yeah, you call New England, you say, hey, we'll give you the number three pick for good old Jimmy Garoppolo, who did play his college ball, you know, Eastern Illinois, I believe. So he's a, you know, he's a hometown guy. We're going to give him the football. He's going to be the guy. But again, you know, you're giving up a whole lot of talent sitting there at number three for a guy that's unproven. I mean, if you take one of those defensive linemen and he pans out, I mean, obviously being a draft pick, there's always a chance, but you know, they do have great grades and all that other fun stuff that goes with it. You know, if this guy pans out, you're looking at a guy who could be a fixture in your line for 7, 8, maybe even 10 years if he stays healthy, where if you draft a quarterback, he's not going to be ready. You know, there's no way any of these guys coming in are going to be ready to start week one. None of them are that talented. So you put him out there, he gets beat to death because your team sucks. What did he learn? Then we go through it next year where he's still probably not ready, and you get beat again. Now we've had, what, 4 years in a row of losing, or is it five? Yeah, you know, I mean, this has been one of the most embarrassing rebuilds I've ever seen. It's literally like this team just doesn't know what they're doing.
No, and I mean, the only thing I can say is what I've heard is that Ryan Pace doesn't normally draft quarterback high. So, is that the silver lining if they keep their number three?
Yeah, you know, the only problem with that is it might mean he might want to trade for one.
Or they can sign Tony Romo.
Obviously that could be, I don't think he would last very long with the Bears with as bad as they are, but, you know, you figure maybe he'll play a week. So, you know, I do see here, John Clayton wrote an article mentioning how Jay Cutler would be the perfect fit for the 49ers. You know, now obviously they're not going to give the Bears the number two pick in the draft. You know, I mean, at this point, what is Cutler even worth? So, you know, the weirdest thing, like I was thinking, he was so bad that I realized, I can't remember which one of our leagues it was, but we have a 20-team league and he wasn't drafted. It was the auction league. He actually wasn't nominated for being drafted. I think somebody ended up picking him up later. But, I mean, you know, you've got 20 teams. You're going to need basically every quarterback because there's bye weeks and everything else that goes along with it. And nobody wanted Jay Cutler. So. Yeah, you know, it's just going to be like, okay, here we go. Let's see what I can get. I have the story here. Let's see if they bring up any any actual trade bait, or if it's just talk about how the the garbage is here. Here you go, Dan. Teams around the league are now aware of Cutler's availability. How exciting is that? Yeah, basically what this is, and now what, do you remember what was the guy's name? Jeff Darlington, right? Was the guy you talked about the tweet? Yeah, basically this is just his idea on what he thinks the Bears should do. There's no mention of a source. There's no mention of anything that goes with it. So this is just something he made up, and he's trying to push it as one of his sources said that this was going to happen or whatever. No. Yeah, well, you see, he got his wish because John Clayton picked it up as news. So now he can verify it because, you know, John Clayton gave him the verification. Which is something, I know we've talked about it here before. The Mickey Mouse Network does quite a bit of that where one of their guys reports something and then the other guy verifies it for them so they can actually report it as a story. And that's all this is. This guy, had an idea. He probably needed a column or something. And, it was just kind of like, okay, well, I'll write about this. And, then we'll see how it goes. And sure enough, somebody picked it up and backed it up. But yeah, he's got no sources. It's no surprise the Bears would actually be shopping Cutler. It's just the fact of what are they going to get for him? Nobody's giving anything for Jay Cutler at this point. So. We'll see. But on to more happier things that you and I like, Dan. I saw that Matt Wieters finally found a team. He ended up getting 2 years, $21 million, to sign with the Nationals. The second year is actually an option. He gets $10 million this year, and it's $11 million next year. I didn't see if it's a mutual option or if it's a player option. Let's see if I can find that really quickly here for us. But are you a little surprised it took Weir so long to find a home?
Yes and no. I mean, I don't remember if they actually got to give up one of their first downs. But I think part of it is. Obviously, the draft's not until June. So if you have to give up that pick, you really need to do your research and, call your scouts and see what's going on and try to, go through your algorithm and your system that the Astros have in place on there and figure out if it's worth giving up that pick.
Yeah, there was actually no pick attached this year. He wasn't given a qualifying offer.
Oh, he was. Oh, well, yeah, then I'm definitely surprised.
Oh.
But he was an agent.
That I don't know. I would have to hunt that down. It wouldn't surprise me. Actually, I think it is Scott Boras, because I believe we mentioned last week that even though he was having a tough time finding a deal, Boras still said he was looking for like 5 years. And yes, it is Scott Boras. So, this is makes it kind of an odd catching situation in Washington. They went out and they traded for Derek Norris, who had just a terrible season last year in San Diego. But I think the year before that, he was actually pretty good. You mentioned they have Jose Lobaton. Who isn't a great hitter, but is really good defensively. And then they got a young guy who I guess is just going to get to play in AAA now. They have Pedro Severino, who's one of their top guy, top prospects, kind of grooming for the position. But, of course, Wieters is here short term, and the other guys are really expendable if Severino's ready, be it this year or next year. So you know, they're not going to, probably not going to carry three catchers, man. Is Lobaton the guy who loses out here, or is it possibly Norris?
I think Lobaton. But you never know with the DH. Can they keep three? Kind of like the Cubs.
So, yeah, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, they didn't give up a ton to get Norris. They just gave up, you know, a minor leaguer. So, you know, if they had to let him go. But I'm willing to bet, I don't, you know, Lobaton is probably still in arbitration or something. So they could, you know, it might be easier to hang on to him and get rid of Norris, depending, you know, of course, depending on how Wheeler's health is. I did find I got a kick out of it this morning. I heard they were talking about the signing on Hot Stove, you know, which is actually one of the decent shows on the MLB Network. And they normally don't bring up sabermetrics. And it was funny because the one guy mentioned to Ron Darling that part of the reason Wieters is still out there was poor pitch framing. And Darling actually laughed at it because he's the first guy I've heard mention that pitch framing really revolves around how good your pitching staff is. You know, because you can only catch the ball where you're throwing, where they're throwing it. So if they can't get it close, you can't frame it. So I love the fact that obviously, you know, he's a smart enough guy to realize this. And, you know, we get all these other idiots who are talking about how great pitch framing is. Again, it's just another – it's another clueless sabermetric stat that means absolutely nothing. So – yeah, they have an actual pitch framing stat. You can actually they actually rank guys on pitch framing. I saw it the other day. And it's just kind of – kind of ridiculous the way they, you know, the way they do it. But yeah, it's like, you know, okay, here it is, you know, here's what we do, and you know, this is how, you know, this is how we do it. And you know, like here, Dan, the best pitch framing catcher in baseball last year, according to, this is statcorner.com. All right, you ready? You could actually probably guess who it is, Dan. Who was the best pitch framing catcher?
David Ross.
Buster Posey. All right, now my next question, Dan, is how good is that Giants pitching staff?
It's one of the best.
So should we be surprised that, here you go, the top three, Dan, Buster Posey, Yasmani Grandal, and Miguel Montero. So basically, the only real good pitching staffs we just didn't name in the National League were the Mets and the Nationals. So there you go. It kind of proves the point, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because David Ross, when he was on MLB, the discussion about, you know, a robotic strike zone, and they really talked about it. And these guys, you know, two guys, we're boasting how his pitch framing is great, this and that. And Eric Burns was like, he's like, Ross, you're telling me you spent, you know, 10, 13 years in the league simply because you could pitch frame? Because I'm not buying it. I'm not believing it. And Ross even came out, you know, pretty much said that, you know, it's not about the pitch framing. It's about the relationship with the umpire. You know, you're out in the first inning or, you know, just for David Ross, you know, you're batting eighth, so you're in the third inning. And you're getting, you know, called strikes on the outside. But then when you're behind the plate and your pitcher throws that strike, you know, he's going, hey, why'd you call that a ball? You called that a strike on me. So he said it's not all about pitch framing. And that really has no validity.
And just so you know, Dan, David Ross was 10th last week.
Well, he didn't play as many.
So, yeah, again. Yeah, you know, again, it's just another, you know, it's guys with their, you know, algorithms and tools who could never play the game, who want to be part of the game, get to be part of the game this way. You know, they came up with a stat that they could figure out, even though, you know, It has absolutely nothing to do with the outcome of the game. You know, some teams are going to learn this the hard way this year. I believe the Diamondbacks signed Jeff Mathis, who will probably hit about 200. But when they signed him, they mentioned what a great pitch framer he was. So, yeah, when he comes up with the bases loaded and two outs and you're down a run and he looks horrible at the plate and he grounds out weakly or pops up, remember how great a pitch framer he is when he just cost you a game. So, you know, it's just, you know, it's just another one of these things that, you know, drive me absolutely nuts when it comes to...
The other side of it with the sabermetrics and, you know, like you said with that, you know, guys who didn't play, it also for guys who aren't watching everything. It's easier to just look at numbers instead of actually watching.
Well, you know, like the other thing I just found hilarious about this is one of the reasons everybody was down on Andrew McCutchen is he was one of the worst rated defensive center fielders last season. And now the Pirates have came out and actually said that that has a lot to do with the way they were positioning him, because people all of a sudden seem to forget that there's a coach in the dugout who moves the outfielders around. It's his job to move the outfielders. So he sets the outfield up, you know, with the shifts and everything you got going on. So a lot of this isn't McCutchen's fault. You know, he's playing where he's told. You know, if you can't get to a ball, you can't get to a ball. You know, it's a bleeder or a flare or a blooper, you know, and you just can't get there. But yet this goes against you defensive metric-wise. And the positioning isn't factored in. So I just get a kick out of that all of a sudden, you know, he went from being one of the best to one of the worst. It's like, really? This is Andrew McCutchen we're talking about here. You know? So, yeah, you know, just another one of the, you know, the fantastic, you know, things you get. And it's so weird how, you know, broadcasters just jump right on the bandwagon. It's like, oh, yeah, you know, he's had this big downgrade. And they're like, wait, what? What are you talking about? I mean, yeah, you know, he didn't hit. Okay, no big deal. That happens. You know, we'll see if he can bounce back. But, yeah, you know, his defense really didn't have anything to do with it, guys. You know, that metric means absolutely.
I'm happy the Pirates didn't trade him. I'd like to see him finish his career in Pittsburgh, despite the fact that they're not going to win a World Series by the time he ends his career.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the change of scenery is going to help. But when you look at two factors, you've got Starling Marte, who plays out there, who's younger. And I'm sure being younger, you're a little bit faster. So I think it's going to work out to be a great, great thing for the Pirates.
So, yeah, you know, I mean, it should be actually a good deal, you know, a good setup. You know, McCutchen can throw, so he'll fit in nicely in right field. You know, I guess my fear is, I believe, you know, his contract is coming up. I don't know if it's this year or next year, and I got a feeling after that he's done, because, you know, they've got that hot prospect in the minors. I think his last name is Matthews. I don't know it off the top of my head, believe it or not. I don't know all the players' names. So, yeah, I think they want to make room for him. So I got a feeling that's what's going to make McCutchen expendable, which is kind of sad. But now, you know, then you know, the other thing I don't know, just kind of confused with is why are we still hung up on this speed of the game thing, Dan? I'm just really getting tired of listening to the media cry about it, because again, you know, these are the guys who continue to cry about it, and it was kind of humorous today. Again, I just happened to catch it on the MLB Network. It was what was on when I turned the TV back on. And Eric Burns was explaining how he takes his kids. Now, he's got a 5, a 6, and a 7-year-old. So talk about kids that would be easily distracted. But he talked about how they went to 12 games last year in 12 different parks, and the kids never once asked him if they could go home early, because teams are now realizing that you need other activities and other things to entertain the small children. because they're going to watch some of the game, but they're going to lose interest, you know, at some point. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you got parks or sideshows or whatever else they got going on. Or he mentioned, I forgot what team it was, that their on-field entertainment was so captivating that the kids actually just sat in their seat because they wanted to see what was going to happen between innings. And yet the media wants the game sped up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the only, you know, Manfred was upset because they couldn't come to an agreement this year. And, you know, the little things I could see that can get boring, but I mean, it's the same as it is in the NFL, as it is in the MLB, as it is in the NBA. The only league you don't see this in is hockey. But, I mean, that's like saying in NASCAR, well, you guys need to speed up cleaning up the track. But then again, the thing that baffles me with NASCAR is there's a caution, and they're still running laps. So you can't complain there. But, I mean, Manfred, I get it, you know, with the crap to the mound. But, again, nobody talks about the stupid instant replay rule. Everyone's just happy they have it. You and I discuss it. I think their instant replay rule is a bunch of crap because you only call for the instant replay when you know you're going to get it right. So it's a BS rule to begin with. You might as well just say everything that, you know, you might as well just list things that qualify and say these could be ruled and we'll just automatically do it. That would speed up the game, number one. And I mean, I get it, you know, the trips to the mound and the stuff like that. Yeah, late in the game when you want to get it over, I think, yeah, maybe you could speed that up a little bit, but whatever, it's part of the game. But, you know, one guy who was being interviewed who covers, you know, sports this morning was saying, you know, I enjoy going to the game. You know, I want to drink a couple beers, and you can't do that in two, you know, in six innings. You know, you can't speed it up. And like you said, the media is the one who drags it on and on and on and on. But here's the one thing that they forget about. How do they get paid? Oh, they get paid to cover the game. How do they get paid? How does the team pay them? And, you know, how do they get the money and all that? Oh, wow, that's right. By people being there, buying concessions and, you know, generating the economics for that team. So, hey, dumbasses, you can continue to pull this, you know, the pace of the game is too long for as long as you want. But when it comes down to it, they're not going to slow down the game, because if you move the game up 2 hours, that means, you know, what do you have? An hour and 15 minutes of alcohol sales?
Yeah.
And then everyone leaves the park and goes and spends all their money at the bar. So you can fight this battle, but maybe I should write about how dumb everyone is.
Well, now here's something, and obviously you'll know this more than I do because I haven't been to a game in quite a while, and you managed to, you know, luckily you're rich enough to afford to go to a couple a year. How many people actually leave early, Dan? Say, like, I know you went to that Giants game where it seemed like nobody left. But, you know, if it's a blowout, you know, it's a 5-0 game or a 6-0 game, how many people actually leave? I mean, what percentage of the crowd wants to get a head start?
Honestly, I would think only about 10%. You know, unless
– so yeah,
don't get me wrong. I'm not – this is not my White Sox, you know, my shot at the White Sox. But when you have a team like they have and you haven't spent, if you didn't spend a whole lot of money going to this game, which people aren't going to spend a whole lot of money going to games this year, and, you know, it's the seventh inning and there's no way the White Sox are coming back, this is not, you know, a chance where you're like, oh, we can't leave. We're not going to, you know, we're going to miss it. So you might have some people leaving early more in situations like that. But as a whole, I think the more people that are there, the less people you're going to see leave, because everyone wants to be a part of it. And that's the other side that people forget about, and old men like my father-in-law get pissy about. Oh, you're bandwagon jumpers, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, the bandwagon jumpers didn't make the Cubs raise tickets 20%. The World Series, and just because they can, allow them to raise it 20% for this upcoming season. But you've got so many people, especially with the Cubs, I'm going to find that out when I go to Boston, that want to be a part of the experience. So they're not going to leave. You know, if you only go to two games a year, why would you leave? You know, I don't.
Yeah.
that's like saying, all right, you know, I think of your favorite director, Steven Spielberg, put out his brand new movie. Everyone loves Steven Spielberg. And it's a 2-hour and 40-minute movie. And in order for you to get to that 2-hour and 40-minute movie, you've got to sit through, what, 20 minutes of freaking previews? You're going to leave early because you watch too many previews? It's the same analogy. It's the same thing. It's entertainment.
Yeah, you know, it just baffles me because, you know, as a kid, you know, we went once a year, you know, my father, you know, well, we went once a year to both parks. We went once to Wrigley, once to Comiskey. You know, that's what my family could afford. So that's, you know, that's what we did. And we never left. It didn't matter what the game was or how, you know, how it was going or any of that stuff. We stayed, you know, all 9 innings. We took our time getting out because we knew, you know, getting out of the parking lot was going to be a nightmare. So, you know, we didn't rush anything. And, you know, this was explained to me, you know, hey, this is kind of what's going to happen. You know, we're going to be stuck here a little while. Just, you know, bear with it. Because obviously, as, you know, a little kid, I mean, you know how it is. You want stuff right then and there. So,
yeah.
But, yeah, you know, and it was no big deal for us to stay. I mean, I loved watching the games. You know what I mean? But, you know, obviously then, you know, there was no phone to distract me or – you know, anything like that. I didn't need a distraction. I wanted to see the game. You know, I know not all kids are like that now. You know, they want to play with their phones or whatever else they got going on. But I'm still not sure this is totally fan-driven.
No, it's not. And again, I mean, they complain about it during the regular season, but the minute playoffs hit, nobody says a word. Nobody said a word when the World Series, was it 7 games they went? It was about 4 hours a game. Granted, the last one, you couldn't help that 20-minute rain delay. Every game was about 4 hours. And it had nothing to do with Joe Maddon and Tito coming out, visiting the mound. It had nothing to do with any of that crap. It's just the only – I mean – you know, one of the things Manfred and supposedly management, I don't know what management refers to, because I would, you know, owners, yeah, okay, I would see that. But again, like I said, the owners aren't involved where they want to speed the game up any quicker because you don't want to lose out on any concession sales. You're making money off the tickets. You're paying a crap load of money to whatever jurisdiction you're in for taxes and all that. And, you know, things like that. So you're making a lot of money off concessions, food, drinks, all that. You're not gonna start shortening that time up. It's insane.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the thing. It seems like, you know, are they not taking into consideration, or maybe teams haven't really noticed this, that, you know, you're going to lose out on stuff if you shorten these games.
Well, here's the other thing, Manfred, you know, everyone wants to, oh, well, we tested it in the minor league. Well, you might as well test it in independent baseball, because guess what? We got some great treatment going down to South Bend. You know, it's different for you and I because we know a little bit more. But the average family going to a minor league game doesn't care. They don't care. It's not Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, you know, John Lester, Jake Arrieta, the list goes on. It's not those guys. So you're not going to keep people for a full 9 innings. I watched the highlight video that the South Bend Cubs put out every morning last season. And let me tell you, the month of April, if you watched it, you know, no offense, but, and this is just minor league baseball, and, you know, you've asked Chris these things about, you know, getting attendance. There could, it looked like some days there wasn't anything more than 300 people in that place. So let's go to Iowa. Maybe I should watch them a little bit more. It's not the same. You're not going to have the same involvement. The people, the locals are there. Yeah, they're going to go, but it's not the same as the majors. So testing, you know, a pitch count, a pitch timer counter, I don't know what the hell you call it, where you put a timer on it.
Yeah.
People, yeah, you need to speed it up in the minors because people want to get it over with. They don't know all these kids. They go down there, they don't know who the hell Eloy Jimenez is. Some of them might, you know, the diehards, but a lot of them don't know who the hell he is. They're going to go there. They're going to have a good time. They're going to let their kids run around. And by the sixth or seventh inning, if they've had enough, they're going to go because guess what? What did I pay to go to that park today? I probably paid,
yeah.
If it were me, my wife, and my daughter, I probably only paid about $40. So if I leave at the seventh inning, it's not the end of the world. Where I'm paying $240 to go see a Cub game, I'm staying there for the 3 hours.
Yeah, the weird part is, you know, the biggest problem of what you're saying and people don't seem to understand is, you know, it just made sense. And for whatever reason, they're just not looking at this in a sensible manner. You know, so it's just kind of like, yeah, okay, great. You know, we're gonna make the game go faster. All right, well, how much concession money did you just lose because the game is now going faster? You know? So, or, you know,
I mean,
you know, or is it going to cost them revenue?
Well, and not only that, you tell me that, and I know this is kind of apples and oranges, but tell me that Vince McMahon calls up people he knows. Well, he probably, you know, not that he would do it, but just his name in general, calls up people here in Chicago. Say, what's working on the independent wrestling scene?
Yeah.
Are you guys doing this to make things? It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, you know, it's just one of those things, again, you know, it baffles me. You know, like I said, it just seems so media-driven, you know, when it comes to this. It does, you know, because, like, I don't really hear fans complain.
No.
You know, I mean, most fans realize when they go to a Major League Baseball game, you know, it's going to be a day-long affair. You know, you're going to leave early to get parking. You know, you're going to hang out in the park. You know, you know most people eat, you know, especially if you got little kids, you know. So, you know, and then the game is going to be 3 hours, three-plus hours. You know that. Then there's no rush to get home because you're going to have to sit in traffic depending on what park you're at. So, you know, they understand this going down there. You would think the media who covers this every day would know, and they just seem like the morons.
Well, and not only that, like you said, I mean, you watch a game on TV, and sometimes, yeah, the games, they could be a little bit longer. But, you know, the slow-paced game that you're watching on TV at home, well, it flies by when you're there. It's the third inning. I've ate some food. I've drank way too much pop or water or beer. I don't really drink alcohol, but, you know, so now it's the third inning. And, you know, I'm there to see the visiting team. So after the top of the third, I'm going to the bathroom. I'm running down. Oh, wait, now I just got distracted because I want a pretzel or, you know, I want to look at the souvenirs. Well, I just got back to my seat, and guess what? It's the bottom of the fourth inning. Holy crap, I missed an inning. You know, God forbid you need to make another trip. You know, you leave after the seventh inning stretch, you come back, it's the top, it's the middle of the eighth. And now there's only an inning and a half. It goes by a lot faster when you're there as a fan spectating than it does as, you know, as a fan at home watching it.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the weird thing. Like, even at home, I know, okay, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to watch this game. It's going to be 3+ hours. You know, it's no different than when I sit down to watch a football game. You know, obviously, you know, if you look at the schedule for the football games, they start at noon and 3:30. Well, why is that? Because it takes 3+ hours to play a football game. So, you know, nobody's like, oh, well, you know, why do these games take so long? You know, just shut up. I, you know, it's one of those things. I just, you know, anytime somebody brings it up on the program I'm watching, I just turn it off. You know, I didn't care about his press conference today to talk about speeding up the game. You know, none of that stuff interested me. You know, again, like you said, you want to speed up the game, fix replay. You know, that's a joke where the manager comes out and stalls while they look at the replay and then tell you if they're going to challenge it or not.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, get rid of that. That'll shave plenty of time off the game.
You know, and what I find interesting, and, you know, I'd love to know, like, you know, when we started this podcast to discover how things are in other markets. I mean, honestly, when you listen, you listen to other sports radio in our town, I really don't hear the local broadcasters complaining about the pace of the game. You know, David Kaplan is a baseball guy. I've never once heard him, seen him tweet, complain about the pace of the game. Do they bring up the topic? Yeah, well, you know, it's like today, like you said, I wasn't listening today, but if it was a topic that was brought up by Manfred and, you know, they got tired of talking about Jay Cutler and the Bears because that's all you talk about in Chicago, you know, the dysfunctional Bulls, and we don't talk about hockey on the radio. You're going to bring up the Manfred stuff. And they might go back and forth on it, and you're going to have a couple of douchebag producers in the background going, yeah, you need to speed the game up, but I'll go to a, you know, a Pearl Jam concert and sit there for 6 hours. No big deal.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm talking about the score right there. Or no, that's ESPN. I don't know. These guys always talk about one of the stations. They always talk about music. I'm like, I don't care. I wanted to talk about music. I'd go listen to Q101 and all that other stuff. But, you know, for the most part, I really don't hear our broadcasters, but then again, they don't have to cover the games. But even that, Jesse Rogers, Bruce Levine covers the teams, both teams, does a weekly Saturday morning baseball show every Saturday. And I've never heard him once complain about the pace of the game.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's just so weird. You know, and the funny thing is I actually heard a guy Sunday defending the media, that it wasn't the media who was doing this. You know, they weren't the ones who complained about, you know, the pace and everything. And it's like, yeah, okay, right. You know, we're not that, you know, not that stupid. So, it's just one of those things. It's like, really, you know, and it, you know, hey, if you get something that works, no problem, you know, just whatever, you know, whatever sets it up or however things go, you know, that's fantastic. But it's just, you know, I'm just kind of, it's one of those things I'm just tired of hearing about. You know, everything is kind of like, yeah, you know, the game takes too long. You know, like, why does the game take too long? It's not, you know, it's like, just go away. Please go away. You know, I don't want to hear that anymore. I'm tired of it. You know, it kills my enjoyment for the game, Dan. It really does. Oh, all right, it looks like by the sound of the music that Dan and I made it through another hour together. Well, we'll come back tomorrow and try to do it again, but you know the deal while we're gone. Get over to sportstimeradio.com. Check out all the cool stuff over there. The new blog goes up tomorrow morning, so look for that. Link over to the Facebook page. Give that a like. Of course, jump on and follow the Twitter feed at Sportstime Radio. You can find Dan and I on Twitter as well. Now, as always, thanks for listening live. We greatly appreciate that. But don't forget, you can also find the podcast anytime you want now at tunein.com.